again, and he's got it!
Gavin was closing in. Oh, Gavin has scored!
Abdul Osman against Brad Jones to put Liverpool out of the cup, and Northampton 3! Yeah!
Hello, yes, we're back. This is It's All Cobblers to Me, the only podcast about following the highs and lows of Northampton Town Football Club. I'm Charles, and coming up today, we've got the lows of Port Vale alongside the highs of Neil Edgerton Scott, Danny Brothers, and Chessy Coleman. Welcome, everyone. You all right?
Wonderful.
Hello.
Hello, Charles.
Hello.
Was that legal? Was that legal highs, Charles?
You are the definition of a legal high, Danny, yes.
It's going on my gravestone, then.
Have we all survived Storm Ciara? Are we all safe and sound and tucked up in bed at night?
I'm not in bed, but I'm safe.
Danny, have you had a trampoline fall into your back garden?
Not quite, but the cat's been living on the edge. Quite a bit
of glory. Oh dear. Chessa, you're okay, but you might have a bit of an issue, I understand, with the old internet not working very well. Is that correct?
It is indeed. We've got a cliff falling down, several trees in roads, and many a wire hanging from telegraph poles. So God knows where this is going to go. But if you hear my voice on the podcast, it means we're still alive.
I'm Chris Hargreaves, and it's all cobblers to me.
Two games to look forward to this week then. First at home to tabletoppers Swindon on Tuesday night, and then a trip to the Bescot on Saturday to face a Walsall side who can't quite make up their mind as to what they're going to be this season. We'll be speaking to a Saddlers fan a little later on in the podcast. First up though, the Cobblers were looking to get back to winning ways on Saturday after being knocked out of the FA Cup last week. But sadly, Port Vale had other ideas and our unbeaten lead record came to a halt. It's fair to say we didn't have the best of days on Saturday, Neil.
We didn't. The weather was not good. It was windy, but it was windy for both teams. Weather was poor for both teams. So don't forget that. No, it was a relatively ropey performance. We're going to lose a game here or there, so there's no need for us to go overboard and panic about it, is there? But there was a bit of a frustration about Saturday, because I actually didn't think Port Vale were very good, and we did have quite a lot of chances. And I've heard a few people say, "Oh, the keeper had a brilliant game and stuff." He made a couple of good saves, but there were saves that you'd expect him to make. It wasn't like wasn't a performance that made it, wow, that was incredible. He did what he was supposed to do. I was just frustrated on Saturday that we kept trying the same thing over and 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 over again. And it was not working and it was frustrating. It was crying out to change tact a little bit, but all we were doing was long throws, corners, long ball. And I know conditions maybe dictated that a little bit, but try something different. Can't harm, can it?
I suppose the way that you might think about it is that, you know, with those conditions, yes, that is maybe the best plan. And maybe you're worried about if you start playing it on the floor, then suddenly you lose the ball in a dangerous position, Danny. Then you're not just losing 1-0, but you're 2-0 down. And that's an even further and longer way back into the game.
Yeah, but it was quite late, wasn't it, when they scored? And I wasn't at the game on Saturday, so I could only kind of...
Lucky you.
Picking through the highlights earlier, and it did seem to be like you say, Neil, quite repetitive and quite. But we were only trying to get the ball out to Nicky Adams and cross the ball in, and hopefully it dropped. On the goalkeeper thing, I think the club put out a clever video that made the goalkeeper look like a hero, didn't he? But when you look at the whole game, it probably wasn't as much to do with that as it could have been, and it's just one of those that's frustrating. But I do think we've gone a bit overboard, some of us with our not of us, but as Cobblers fans have gone, suddenly we've lost the game and it's all chaos, and I don't think we should be like that. We're still in a decent position and it's going to happen, isn't it? We're not going to win every game from now to the end of the season, so
that's right.
Little stumble in the rose, hopefully, Charles.
Just a little speed bump.
Yeah. Speed bump.
Yeah. It becomes a concern if we lose against Swindon and Walsall.
Yeah.
A concern.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Lose three in a row, then you're starting to hold on a minute.
Yeah. But yeah, I get that. I mean,
big chance.
Yeah, it was a big chance, wasn't it? I mean, Chessy, you know, there were other teams that are in that chasing pack in the playoffs. that also had bad days at the office with their results, or at least they were at sort of half time. It was an opportunity missed, wasn't it?
It was. The timing of it was quite bad, given the fact that, like you say, people like Plymouth really badly slipped up and we could have really capitalised on that. But also the timing in terms of the fact that we've got Swindon on Tuesday night, I think is quite important. I think what the boys are saying is 100% right. It is just one performance and we just need to kind of step back and just say, OK, this is one game of many and we are going to lose some, we are going to trip up. But Neil is right as well in what he's saying, that we need to make sure that this is only one game and doesn't suddenly turn into three. I think I can't remember what our cushion is from eighth place. I think it was 8 points maybe one or two games ago. So that tells you how quickly that can change. So perhaps we need to just keep an eye on that and just almost kind of lower our expectations for a minute and just stabilise ourselves in that playoff place as opposed to looking ahead at automatic promotion. I think perhaps that will come, but we just need to nail this playoff place first, get that done and get a cushion between eighth and us, which is the really important place to be, as opposed to trying to get into the automatics. Let's just take one step at a time.
Did you think, Neil, that the Dane Oliver was maybe a bit better this week? I mean, Keith Curl said the Derby game that he hauled him off at halftime because he wasn't doing what you wanted him to do. Do you think that kick up the bum worked for Verdane?
I thought it was as he usually is. I don't think he took his performance up a level by all means, but also he wasn't any worse than he usually is. I thought he was just his usual self. I thought he was against Derby as well. So it's a difficult one because I don't know what Keith was on about. He was guilty of missing a few chances. He tends to snap at chances when he has to settle himself a little bit and stuff. He seems to need to be a bit more calm. Maybe he needs to go through the same process that Sam Hoskins has gone through, maybe.
What, 3 years of being vilified?
Well, yeah.
It's five, isn't it?
I thought there was noticeable, especially during the second half, Verdane Oliver was getting very frustrated numerous times when he won a flick on or whatever and stuff, and nobody had sort of preempted it and taken a gamble on it. And there was a few times where he was noticeably annoyed. And you can understand it, to be honest. And there was a couple of players that had terrible games on Saturday. Ryan Watson, the worst game I've ever seen him have for us. It was atrocious. And he's not usually like that. So you put it down to a one-off bad game, but he was so bad. It was.
In what way? What caused him to have a bad game? Or why did you think that?
Because he played crap, Charles.
Yeah, but in what way? Like, I wasn't there. So you say he played crap. What was he doing or not doing?
Oh, his passes were terrible all over the place. His control was all over the place for some reason, because usually it's not too bad. His effort looked to have waned a little bit, and I think I suspect maybe he's just a bit tired, and maybe he was just off the pace by a yard or so. But his closing down wasn't what it usually is and stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, the midfield was bypassed for a large percentage of the game, but I did think he had a really poor game. Which is unusual for him, because usually he's relatively consistent, isn't he? He's never really a sort of a 9 out of 10 or a 1 out of 10. He's usually just solid consistency, sort of 7 out of 10, 6.5, 7 out of 10. And it was lower than that. And so I thought he had a really poor game. But hopefully a one-off.
Jesse, do you think, like Neil mentioned tiredness there, do you think that is now becoming a factor? I mean, I'm just looking at our results over the last month or so. Since the start of the year, we've played 10 games and we're only in, what, the second week of February? That's a lot of football. You know, that's pretty much Saturday, Tuesday on repeat for 6, 7, 8 weeks.
I think it's a bit of a worry that they are getting tired. And I'd like to think they shouldn't really, because they're professional footballers, but it's very easy for us to sit in our ivory towers and say that because we're not professional footballers and we're never going to be professional footballers. And we don't really know how they're feeling. We don't really know how they're feeling, but I think the demand that's been put on our players and, for example, the amount of work we've had to put in over two games against Derby would have had an effect on them, without doubt. But Keith Curls had a really good point a couple of weeks ago when he said that when you're doing really well, players don't get injured. But when you're on a really bad run, players will go down with a twisted sock, is the exact expression that he used. And I think that is really quite key. Why are you laughing? That's what he said.
That's what I've heard.
So, you know, that is quite a valid point as well. I think that what the run that we've been on has been really, really good, and therefore adrenaline and the run itself carries us through that. But as soon as you start losing, the fatigue does set in. So we just need to come away from this hurdle and get past it and keep winning. And if we do that, we'll be okay. This kind of point reminds me of when Wilder's team had Leighton Orient, Wickham and Oxford all in the same week. And we came away from that and we won every game. I know we haven't won each game this time, but it's very, very similar in the fact that it's a really difficult period and you just got to get through it and get through it with as many points as possible.
Can I just pick you up on one thing? Right, Chessie, you're a teacher, right?
Yep.
So you have, let's say, what is it, 6 weeks in between each, like, half-term school holiday, roughly?
Seven or eight.
Yeah, so by the time that you're in that seventh or eighth week, are you tired?
Yeah.
But you're a professional teacher. You shouldn't get tired.
True.
all I mean is I look at it and go, when people say, oh, they're professional footballers, they shouldn't get tired. We all get tired at work.
Yeah.
When we've not had a break for such a long time. And
of course we do.
We all get, you know, fatigued if we're on a particularly, like, you know, Neil works shifts, I think, where he, you know. Okay, so Neil, you work Monday to Friday. And you
correct,
do.
Charles.
You have your weekend. By the time you get to Friday, how productive are you on a Friday afternoon?
Very productive. Probably my most productive.
You liar.
Well, my boss might be listening. So.
That's true. Okay, fair point.
But equally though, Charles, yeah. my teaching doesn't change regardless of how tired I am. So I would like to think that as professional footballers, their standard of play doesn't change depending on how tired they are. You can be mentally tired. You can be mentally tired, but you don't show it.
Okay, I get your point, but you're,
do you see what
you're
I mean?
Well, roughly. We'll move on.
You asked the question.
I did.
A couple more things on the Port Vale game.
Yeah.
Special mention, Sam Hoskins didn't touch the ball until the 23rd minute.
Brilliant.
No, it doesn't need to, does he?
But what happened when he did touch it in the 23rd minute?
He got a yellow card.
Oh, come on.
He got a yellow card.
Don't you go getting the ball.
Is that what breaks me, doesn't it?
No, by no way was his fault at all, by the way, and he didn't particularly have a bad game. It was just the way the game panned out. The first 20 minutes may as well have not have happened.
That's what they said on the radio. It was shocking, wasn't it?
It was the world's worst 20 minutes of, even calling it football feels wrong. It was horrific. And then the second thing I wanted to mention was Tim Oglethorpe was doing the commentary. And I happened to hear a little bit of him saying that Verdane Oliver, well, he's close by. Verdane Oliver was wearing some snazzy black gloves. And they're just plain black. There's nothing snazzy about them. It just made me, I turned around and I looked at him and I was like, what's he on about?
Steve Phillips had an opinion on him as well. Probably jumped in halfway through his sentence to that's not Glanton.
Steve Phillips had to stifle a Jesus Christ at one point.
Oh, no.
My eardrums were bleeding by 5 p.m.
You know, just to mention, the survey that we've conducted for the start of this year, one of the comments that we actually had was, please don't get Steve Phillips on as a guest.
There's already too many people interrupting you, Charles.
Oh, dear. Exactly.
He says as well, if you listen back, if you watch the game back on the iFollow thingy, because you can watch a large percentage of it back and stuff, there's a chance where we cross it in and Charlie Goode, I think, tries to connect and a couple of other players either side of him try to connect, but it just sort of misses everyone. And he says, well, if there'd been someone else rather than Charlie there, then we would have scored. But there was like five people there trying to go for it. It's ridiculous.
He gets on their back quite a lot as well, doesn't he?
Should have scored is his favourite phrase.
Should have scored, yeah. It's a goal kick, mate.
Anyway, back to the game, slightly. Charles Breakspear didn't send anyone off.
I was so disappointed. I was ready to be angry about this.
He forgot there was a game going on, Charles.
He'd gone wayward. He had a chance to send someone off when their player pushed... who was it he pushed? Paul Anderson, I think it was. Raised both hands and pushed him in the chest.
Really?
Yeah, but if Paul Anderson had gone down theatrically, he probably would have ended up
holding his beard.
Yeah, holding his beard, but he didn't. He didn't even go down. So they both got a yellow card for that incident.
Oh, really? And what did Ando do to deserve this yellow card?
Oh, he'd done very cynical fouls in the space of 1 second.
Right. So which is Alan why McCormack the guy, levels.
I think it was. I think it was there. Montano, is it? Chris? Is that what a player called? Yeah, it was him. It was a really cynical foul on him, and then he jumped up and pushed him. And then there was a bit of, oh, you're an idiot, you're an idiot. And then Breakspear got involved.
Oh, well, never mind. Well,
won't hopefully be as good as Chris Wilder versus Bournemouth today, though, will it? Let's be honest.
Do we think that we're just going to put that down to a bad day at the office for the Cobblers?
We need to. It's really important that we do put it down to just a bad day. I think if we start really going on towards a negative mindset off this one performance, it could be really damaging for us. They've done really, really well, and we need to just make sure that we just treat this as what it is and just one silly defeat. It'll be okay. I honestly think it'll be okay, and I think we'll pick ourselves up. We might not get a win against Swindon, but we need to pick ourselves up and just keep going. We've just got to keep going.
I'm Nicky Adams, and it's all Cobblers to me.
Well, talking of Swindon then, let's move on and take a look at what's happening on Tuesday night. It's another home game, so it is a good chance, I would say, for us to actually bounce back. Swindon, though, will be coming into that game probably with that 1-0 defeat down at the County Ground still fresh in their minds, and they'll be wanting to get their revenge, I would imagine, Danny.
What a game that was. That was our first win of the season, wasn't it? And was it their first defeat, from what I remember? And
it was
ridiculous. I nearly lost the plot.
Ridiculous
that
Andy Williams goal it was. But I was looking at this earlier, and I was thinking, looking at our, like Joe Bunny played that game for us. This just seems like decades ago. And Billy Waters and Verdane Oliver was a mere substitute. It just looks a completely different lineup, so it shows quite how far we've come. But yeah, it was just hilarious, wasn't it? And they will come with that in the back of their minds. And also, they've got such a lot to play for, and they're edging closer and closer, aren't they? So it's going to be a really difficult game. But anybody can beat anyone in this league, so it's one of them. It's just one of them, and you shouldn't really treat them much different to what we treat Scunthorpe in some ways. They've got obviously their
Scuddy.
Thanks, Neil. They're two or three signers that have made the hope. Doyle and who's the other one?
What's his name? That one that we almost signed for £3 million.
Yates. Yeah, that's it. snap them up and they're proper going for it. But I don't think we should treat them any different to anyone else. And there's no reason why we can't win this. It'd be cobbler's law for us to go and lose on Saturday and win this one, wouldn't it? So wipe it clean. I think from Saturday, wipe it clean, yeah.
wipe it clean.
Well, the storm's come in. The winds of change have come in. There's a new wave started. And let's get back on it.
In fairness, though, Neil, if we do beat...
Moving on to Neil.
Yeah, moving on to Neil quickly. If we do beat Swindon...
Voice of reason.
If we do beat Swindon on Tuesday night, then everything will be rosy again, won't it?
Yeah, everything will be rosy and Jim if we win again on Tuesday, and we'll be windmilling down Abingdon Street, Charles. One thing actually that I thought was interesting, that you're right, yeah, if we win it, we're fine. If we lose, then people will start panicking a little bit even more. But one thing I thought was interesting, what Keith Curl said after the Port Vale defeat, he was very clear in saying, we know we're nowhere near the finished article yet and we've got a long way to go. I mean, we're running out of time to become this article that he's been on about for a while. I just thought that was interesting. I mean, how many games are actually left?
15.
Not many.
About a third of the season.
15. So, I mean, kind of need to really sort of be...
Start writing that article, Keith. Come on.
Yeah, we kind of really need to be getting towards finished article stage, don't we?
I feel like we're as good as we can get, though. I don't think we can go much higher than, probably in league term, but in terms of our performances, I don't think we can change that much that's going to take us onto that.
I think you're right.
It's this from here on in now, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the problem. The problem is with the style we play, like, you can't really do much different, can you? And it's, if we take our chances, then it works. If we don't, when we get caught, it doesn't.
And what's gone as well is that slight fear of teams coming here. We're going on that 10-game unbeaten run. Do we win 9 and draw 1? That fear has probably now been wiped off by Port Vale. Swindon won't have as much fear coming here as they might have done before, but might actually work in our favour. I don't know. Just win.
But why don't you know, Danny?
I'm still writing the article, Neil.
At least you've started yours.
Jesse,
I've edited it a few times.
There are still, technically, according to Keith Kill, the Cobblers can still lose 6 games this season and get promoted. We're currently on, we've lost 9 games so far this season. That is the most of any team top 7 let's go with for the playoffs.
Do what we want. Do what we want. We'll lose when we want.
Do you think Swindon coming here on Tuesday night, if they come and they tear us apart, are we going to start, you know, are we going to be going back to sort of how we were feeling back sort of October time where the world was ending?
We really shouldn't do. It's going to be a really tricky match, and it's going to be a match where if we lose it, I think, I can't remember whether it was Danny or Neil who said it, but I think people will start to panic. But I really don't think we need to. I think the boys are right in what they say in terms of, I think we can't get much better than we're doing. So, you know, if we do get torn apart by them, then it's going to happen. We can't change that. But what we have to do is we have to look at what's around us in that playoff place, and our focus is just making sure we retain that place. There's no reason to say getting destroyed by Swindon means that you're not good enough to go up, because actually it doesn't. The second place might get destroyed by Swindon. Third place might get destroyed by Swindon. But ultimately, they are the strongest team in the league. So actually, it's one of those games where really it's doesn't follow the usual rule, because we might end up getting absolutely crucified by them, but then win the next 10 games.
No.
So it's really difficult to tell.
No, bugger that. Swindon aren't that good.
I'm not saying they are. What I'm saying is, at the moment, they're tearing people apart. So they're the ones that in other teams'
well, you,
view
you
are
say
better.
That they're tearing other teams apart. They only managed Carlisle, a one-all draw against Carlisle on Saturday. They did beat Exeter 2-1 at home last weekend. But the Tuesday night before then, they got hammered 3-1 at Colchester. So they are beatable. Mm. And we've already done it once this season.
Yeah, of course they are. Of course they are. Any team is beatable.
I ain't scared of
Liverpool, mate.
There's no reason why we can't go and beat them. But equally, there's no reason for us to worry if we do get beaten by them, because there's going to be arguably another 14 teams that are going to get beaten by them as well. Because they're at the top. You've got to treat them as they come.
You're very right there. I'm just looking to see whether Owen Doyle has scored since he returned. So the last time that Owen Doyle scored for Swindon was in their 2-1 away win at Plymouth, which was on the 1st of January, I think.
No, I'm sure he scored since he come back.
Hallam Hope scored twice since he signed for Swindon. But he has not. Owen Doyle has not scored since he returned to Swindon.
Cheers, Charles.
Oh, lovely.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that fact. Can't wait.
That doesn't mean that he's going
Thank
to score.
Thank God it's a Tuesday night.
We said that about Van Veen, didn't we? And then, hi, Kev.
So let's get some predictions then for Swindon on Tuesday night. Chessie, we'll start with you.
1-1.
Sensible
soccer.
Goal scorer, Verdane.
And Owen Doyle, the scorer for Swindon, I presume. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, obviously, definitely. Yeah.
Danny Brothers.
Hi. Swindon, Tuesday night, 7:45, is it?
Where is it?
Sixfields, PTS, name that bench and all that. I'm going for a 1-0 win.
1-0 win.
Balls to it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Goal scorer?
It's going to be late, and it's going to be an own goal.
Ooh.
By Owen Doyle.
By Saidi Sonokho.
Good player.
Brilliant.
He's famous for scoring own goals, so going to continue that run.
Fantastic. I like that.
Obviously from a Hoskins cross.
I'm just looking at their squad here. They've got Danny Rose.
They have got Danny Rose.
Ex-cobbler Danny Rose.
He's not been quite right since he broke his leg, has he, though?
Do you mean since John Joe Till broke his leg?
Yeah, that was bad, wasn't it?
It was a bit bad. But that'll be nice to see him back at Sixfields, another title winner. A couple of other players that they've got in their squad that I recognise the names of. Zeki Friars.
Who?
Oh, he's supposed to be quite good, isn't he?
He was a Tottenham youth teamer that always used to appear on My Football Manager saves. That's where I recognise his name from.
No, he's quite good. He's pretty nippy, I think, by the sounds of it.
I think he's either a left back or a left winger, something like that. And they've got Lloyd Isgrove, who we were rumoured to try and sign back at back in the summer. But he went to Swindon instead. And of course, there's Hallam Hope as well. I'm going for a draw. I think, Chessie, you took a 1-1 draw already. So I'll go with 2-2. And I think Callum Morton will score both goals for us. And it'll be a Keshi Anderson brace for Swindon.
Oh, God, I forgot he plays for them. I might have to revise my prediction.
No, too late.
He's not getting in that front line, surely, is he?
Well, you'd hope not, but I think he'll come off the bench. That's what'll happen, is he'll come off the bench and he'll score a brace. And we'll go crying off into the night. Neil, your prediction for Tuesday night.
Hello, who are we playing?
Swindon Town.
Swindon Town. FC. I will go...
Jan Agafjord.
Ah, Jan's team. I feel you. I'll go 4-1 Swindon.
Oh my God.
Who's going to get our goal?
Who cares, Charles? I will go with Mark Marshall off the mark. I think this will be the rock bottom. I think we'll get hammered on Tuesday, and I think it'll be a really poor performance. We'll get battered. But then I think we'll go on a long run.
So you think this is going to be Crawley again, do you? And like Scunthorpe away was?
Yeah, I think that's what this game will be. And then we'll reset, and then we'll go again on another long, decent run.
Until the end of the season?
The Halifax.
Yes, and then we'll get battered again in the playoffs, no doubt.
Always the way.
I'm Chris Freestone, and it's all cobblers to me.
So a couple of other things that happened this week in the land of the cobblers. First of all... on the down low, really, this happened, Danny, didn't it? It seems that David Kelly, the coach that came in to look after the development of the youngsters, has left the club by mutual consent and has been replaced by Ronnie Jepson, not to be confused with Ronnie Johnson.
Or Ronnie Rosenthal.
Not sure.
Or Ronnie Cray.
Ronnie Barker.
Ronald McDonald.
That'd be incredible. Get him in.
The first thing I thought about was Championship Manager 97. He just seemed to be all over that, Ronnie Jepson. Came for someone, Berry or something, I think it was.
R.I.P.
I don't really know what to say about it, Charles, which is quite difficult for a podcast when you haven't got much to say. Yeah, it happened. Not sure why. It's a strange time of the year for it to happen.
Hello, I'm the voice of Gaviscon, Max Rushton, and it's all cobblers to me.
One of the other things that's apparently happening this week is that the Supporters Trust are releasing the details of their Freedom of Information request that they received back from the council.
Taking their time.
They announced, didn't they, a couple of weeks ago that they had applied and received details of their Freedom of Information request, and that following a meeting of the Trust's board, they would release the details of it. And it would seem, according to what's being said on the Hotel and message board, that we should be receiving those details at some point this week. I'm rather interested to see what this is going to be, because obviously I think everybody that listens is probably quite aware of my feelings with regards to the whole redevelopment and the trust and the club spat and all this, that and the other, which is essentially I haven't seen any, I haven't seen any evidence of any actual wrongdoing from anyone on either side. I do think that the East Stand should be done, and, you know, and I would quite happily sit there with Kelvin Thomas and James Whiting and everybody involved with the club and say, please God, just finish the stand. Come on, get on with it. I would be very happy to do that. But at the same time, I would turn around and say, well, you know, you should get your own house in order before you start slating others. I.e., that's what I think about, you know, with the trust, is that essentially there are so many things that they should be or could be doing better before they start saying that the club aren't running themselves properly, if that is actually what they're trying to say. But with this, the one thing that I've sort of been privy to, or have I've sort of known about, is that the club are dealing with particular people that I think are probably civil servants that work full time for the council. These aren't elected people. They are people that have full time jobs. They're the people that the club are probably in contact with regarding all of the business regarding the leases and any planning permission that they may or may not be actually requesting, all this sort of stuff. And the trust have been in contact with the people that are at the council who are elected members. So it was people like Jonathan Nunn that they had at their last, or one of their last meetings, public meetings, and Jonathan Nunn turned around and said that there was nothing stopping the club from doing X, Y, and Z. But the club sort of responded in a way by sort of saying, well, they're not the people that we're talking to, and the people that we are talking to aren't having to say things in order to try and get re-elected or, you know, have public approval. So I will be quite interested to see what this Freedom of Information request actually comes out with and acknowledges from either side of it. Is there anything that you guys think that it might come out and would maybe be in either the club or the trust's favour?
It obviously isn't going to be in the club's favour, is it?
No?
And I don't care anymore either. I was just thinking about that when you were talking.
Rambling.
Well, no, you were informing people of the situation. You did a good job of it, Charles. But I honestly don't care anymore, I don't think.
Terms of the whole thing with the stand and...
It's just petty. Well, innit? Like, oh, God. They said this, they're not doing that. They said this. Well, we didn't say that. We did said this. We never said this. We did that. Actually, you know, we'll say it. We'll do it when we're... It's just... I don't care. I honestly don't care. The Trust have got their own approach and their own view, and I think they're right to get stick, by the way, for taking their time with this, because they're the first to moan about the club not sharing information, and they're the first to moan when the club don't do something in what they perceive in the required time frame, such as when that CDNL land was transferred over. They were the first ones to be moaning on the Hotel M message board about the club not changing the details on company's house and it taking too long. Oh, it's finally done. And then a little dig, oh, what about Belle du Jour, though, and all that sort of thing and stuff. And it's like, oh, look, they're both as bad as each other. It's probably never going to get solved. I've kind of resigned to the fact that it's just never going to get resolved. You've got the Trust on one end. You've got, you know, some of the fan base on their side who are adamant that Kelvin Thomas and the rest of the people at the club are the devil, and that they're only in it for themselves and it's never going to get sorted and it's all a nightmare. You've got the club who are saying, you know, that they've pretty much refused to work with the Trust, which you can kind of understand their viewpoint. But the Trust, the club are saying, well, it's all the council's fault. It's all the council's fault. You know, we're waiting on them. We've been waiting on them for 3 years. You've got the council saying, probably don't really know their arse from their elbow. And they say one thing to one group, another thing to another group. You've got, like you said, Charles, you've got some people that are elected dealing with it with one group, some people that aren't elected dealing with the other group. And it's obviously not all meeting up somewhere. I just don't think it's ever going to happen. And I honestly don't care anymore. Build a water park in the East End. Job done.
Maybe that's what it is.
Don't. I care, but I'm beyond caring about all the nitpicking and who said what and who said this and all that sort of, I don't care.
Jesse, do you think that it's still an important thing to have this kind of thing that what Neil is talking about there, the nitpicking, the stuff where there's, you know, I've got no reason to disbelieve that the Trust aren't doing stuff for the benefit of the football club and the community that the football club represents. I've got no issue with that whatsoever. But there's got to be a time when you've both got to sort of just turn around and just say, right, we're not getting anywhere here, either side. And so maybe we actually look to try and just cool things a little bit.
Have the trust ever gone to the club recently and said, right, what can we do to help? How can we help get things moving quicker? How can we help advance things? I don't think they will have done. Maybe they have. I don't know. But I assume they haven't done on the basis that they don't agree with the club's approach. But surely something's got to give somewhere. And until it does, I ain't interested.
To be honest, because of the situation as to where I live, I don't really hear much because I've not got, like, you know, local newspapers and yada, yada, yada. Hear much to do with the trust and to do with the development. And I'm kind of on the same page as Neil in terms of that I've kind of got bored of it over the last few years and tend to ignore it unless it's really major. And I think I said that a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the East End. But I honestly believe, and I might be wrong because it is all about opinions, but I don't think our club is different in terms of the way it's run and the way that things go underground and aren't really surfaced. I don't think that is too different or too dissimilar to many other clubs in League One and Two. I think football is a totally different entity and a totally different way of running a business as such. And I think that a lot of clubs are in the same position as us where they're not told an awful lot of things that maybe they should be, but in reality they're not. And I think that actually we're not told a lot, but I don't think this club in particular is in a unique position with that. I think that happens at quite a few clubs and you don't really know what's going on and it takes a little while for things to be announced. And I just think we need to just let it be. And the supporters just, like you said, Charles, do a great job in you know, helping what they do.
What do they do a great job of?
Well, the way they've supported the club in years gone by and when it was founded, when it was set up and how they've funded things to make sure the club survived.
100%. Last four years, what have they done a great job of?
Okay, well, like I said, I don't know because I don't really take a lot of notice of it because I'm not there. So I'm not probably the best person to ask.
No, not good enough, Jeffy. Jeffy is not good enough. Danny or Charles, what good for the club have they done in the last 3 or 4 years?
The trust for me seem to me like they're not like a life saving organisation, but one that would only come to the fore as such. And you kind of notice them when they are doing something like the SOS campaign or that kind of bucket rattling thing. And you do notice their work, but I do think there's a lot of good stuff that goes around, and people mock the, you know, the boot sales and all this kind of thing and the nights that they do. But I still think it's important to keep us ticking over, and they do kind of things here and there that do contribute to the club, and I don't think that should be forgotten. But I don't know. It's kind of like, what do you want them to do, isn't it? What would you want them to be as a trust?
I want them to be a valid and public voice for the fans, and I want them to work with the football club, not against the football club. I want them to work with the football club for the greater good of the football club.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah,
there's some brilliant people involved in the trust. Don't get me wrong. It sounds like I'm having a real pop at the trust, and that's genuinely not the case. I'm just frustrated by what they are at the moment, and they could be so much better. So could the football club, by the way. Don't get me wrong, it's not to take sides, but they could be so much better and they could represent the fan base and they could get involved with the fan base so much better. So much better. You go to any of those trust meetings and this is going to sound bad, but I'll say it anyway, but the average age of the people that attend in those meetings is very, very interesting.
So are you saying that they're of a particular age?
In general, yes. They're generally the older generation of Cobblers fans, which is fine. You know, no issue with that at all. But surely, if you want to represent a wide range of the fan base, you've got a couple of hundred young lads that sit up in the southwest corner of the south stand. Are they represented by the trust? I'd say probably not. You've got a couple of hundred young lads that sit in the centre of the north stand. You've got 400 or 500 young people that go to away games consistently consistently are always there.
You've got a shed load of women that go and watch as well. And I don't know how many women are in the trust as well.
There's definitely a couple of women on the board. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
there's definitely
a fair few, which is great.
I understand what you're saying, Neil, but at the same time, if the only people that are willing to give up their time and to become members of the trust and become members of the board and to help shape the trust are of that certain age, so if they don't get anyone from those young groups that you've mentioned in the South, the south end of the West Stand and the centre of the North Stand, then what can the trust actually do? Because they do ask and they do say, look, you know, we want people to, you know, come on board. If you, you know, if you want to help change it, come and change it from the inside. You know, come and join us.
But how do they ask?
They ask. I don't. what do you mean? Sorry.
But how do they ask? Do they at games? Do they go and? Does you know a couple of the trust representatives go and stand with these guys and have a chat with the younger elements of the support and stuff? Do they try and reach out to them before games? Do they, you know, they go up to the Six Fields Tavern, or do they go to the pubs and have a chat? And you know, do they set up specific meetings for these, you know, for the younger generation? Because look, if the trust said, and they never would, clearly, because I'm very opinionated, but if the trust ever said to me, you know, look, come and get involved and help change us from the inside, I wouldn't go, and I wouldn't feel comfortable going along to their first big agenda meeting. You'd want to meet a couple of them first, and you know, you need to do it different ways. You can't very well just say, well, come along to a meeting. Well, no, it don't work like that. You've got to integrate people into it, and there's different ways of doing it that they could just do so much more, and they could be such better representation for them, and it would be for the greater good of the trust.
I agree with you. You know, I do. My personal opinion is that there are a lot of things that the trust could be doing better. And actually, what you've just said there, that's not something that I'd necessarily thought about, but you are right. You know, at the moment, I see a lot of what the trust say because I follow them on Twitter, I follow them on Facebook. I've looked at their brand new website, which looks very nice, and it's, you know, better than the previous version. You can sign up to their message board now. You have to use your own name, and you have to actually be accepted onto the message board. But you know, at the end of the day, you can. They've opened up a forum for you to be able to go in there. You don't have to be a trust member, I don't think, to actually register that. The only rule is that you use your actual name. I think that is a good idea, and it is a good step forward for the trust. I also think what you've said about going and meeting up and trying to find out what these people actually think is actually a good way of doing it, and would be something that would be a good thing to go and do, to go and actually stand with those members of the support or sit or whatever and actually get involved and sort of actually go and speak to them rather than just saying, you know, come to our meeting. If you're free on this date, we'd love to have you there. Yes, of course, say that as well. But there are other ways and means, as you say, Neil, to do it. Go on, Chester, you had something to say.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, we might sit here and we might have quite a heated debate about what the trust do and don't do and what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. Ultimately, what we do have to remember from this conversation is that they are the people that will be rattling those buckets if the things don't go to plan, and have rattled buckets several times for our football club. So I think as much as we can sit here and we can say, you know, they should be doing this, you should be doing that, and it's very easy for everybody to say that, but actually ultimately they are trying. They might not be doing it the right way, but they are trying to do what's best for the club, and that does has to be admired.
I'm Chris Wilder,
and it's all cobblers to me.
Hi, it's Tom.
Thanks for joining me on It's All Cobblers to Me, Tom. It's nice to have you here. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, mate. It's good to be with you.
Fantastic. So, Walsall then, last time we met was way back on the first day of the season. You came away with a 1-0 win and sent our fans, and me included, away that day, feeling quite miserable. Our expectations were suddenly put way back in their place. But actually, since then, you've not really gone on and done the things that you wanted to do either, I don't think.
No, I think that first game of the season was an interesting microcosm because, you know, the story of our season is us struggling to impose ourselves on games. So we're much more likely to win a game by nicking the odd goal and holding on to a lead, exactly what we did at your place on the first day of the season, basically. And the result of that is that we're a classic mid-table side this season. I wish I could say that we're brilliant one week and terrible the next, but the truth is that we're more likely to be average one week and terrible the next. But in League Two, that seems to be enough for a mid-table finish at the moment, which looks like that looks like what we're heading for.
Would you be satisfied with that 1 year on from relegation from League One?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't think we'd have done a little bit better, but I think that was probably based on Daryl Clark's record, you know, which is very good. But the truth is, his recruitment hasn't been great. There's been a lot of tinkering with the team, and we just haven't performed, really. We've lacked creativity from midfield. You know, unless Wes McDonald chips in with a bit of magic, which we've relied on far too much this season, we're struggling to create much, really. So, you know, we haven't looked like, you know, as I say, imposing ourselves on games at all this season.
Yeah, we're recording this on Monday evening, so you've got Newport County on Tuesday away from home. But your last result that we can actually talk about, you did get a win away at Forest Green. That is your first win in five games or six games, maybe even going back here.
Yeah, we've won two out of our last seven, I think. But before that, we actually had we had really good form, sort of either side of Christmas in that big run of games. We actually had top four form, I think, in terms of, you know, over sort of 9 or 10 games without ever looking like a genuine top four side. So that's the kind of season it's been, really.
I think that does say a lot for League Two. I mean, there's a lot of our fans I know will turn around and say that we don't play very attractive football. We're not a very good side, really. But there we are up in, well, I think we're in sixth place at the moment as it stands. And hopefully looking good for a playoff berth at least. I mean, do you think you might be able to claw back the gap and reach the playoffs? Or are you now sort of saying to yourself, no, that gap is a bit too big now? I mean, it is 9 points, I think, looking at this.
I think it's very unlikely. I mean, it's a conversation we always seem to have just before we record a pod ourselves. So, you know, if we go and win at Newport tomorrow and then win again against you on Saturday, then of course our first topic of conversation is, you know, we couldn't, could we? You know, there's no chance of us getting in the playoffs is there? And we get all excited, and we've done that a couple of times this season. And the answer is basically no, because there is probably another poor run around the corner. And yeah, we're just too inconsistent, unfortunately. It has been a season of transition, you know, coming down. Is never easy. Building a squad isn't easy. We had the highest turnover of players in the division, but interestingly enough, yourselves had the second highest turnover of players over the summer, and Keith Curls, you know, managed to turn you into a top six side. So it is possible. It just hasn't been possible this season for one reason or another.
When was it that Clark took over? Did we oversee your relegation at the end of last season?
No, he took over in the close season. So he oversaw, you know, the forest of dead wood that we had to get rid of, and a lot of new players coming in. He's tried to promote kids from the youth team, which did seem to be working out well. We had a player called Alfie Bates who came in and did really well. He's just 18, local lad. But he seems to have disappeared recently and hasn't been starting or even making the bench on occasion. So that seems to have stalled a little bit. But yeah, as I said earlier, the players he has brought in, his recruitment hasn't been brilliant, it has to be said. Most of the sort of better performers this season, aside from Wes McDonald and possibly Keelan Lavery, were probably already at the club, to be honest.
Can you see what Clark's trying to do, though? It's one of the things that we kind of now say about Keith Curl is that last season when he came in, he came into us about October time in 2018. He essentially had the vast majority of last season to assess the players, and then he went out and had that massive churn of players at the end of last season. But now we can see what he's trying to achieve and what he's trying to do with his style of play. Can you see that with Clark?
Not yet, no, which is slightly worrying. I mean, Walsall has been a team that, you know, has had a very much a certain style of play. I mean, we had 2 years of Romain Sawyers pulling the strings, and then we had 2 years of Erhon Osttuma doing the same thing. So we're used to watching a number 10 run the show and, you know, decent attacking football. It didn't always work, but you could see what the plan was. With Clark, I'm not entirely sure that's the case. As I said earlier, we seem over-reliant on Wes McDonald chipping in with a bit of magic. And other than that, with a lack of creativity from the rest of the midfield, we're just sort of overly reliant on, you know, long balls into the channels more often than not. And a lot of the football served up this season has been, you know, very uninspiring to say the least. So in terms of a plan, I think, you know, we're happy for him to have a season of transition. But I think if fans don't start seeing us moving forward next season, it could get a bit sticky for Clark.
You've mentioned Wes McDonald a few times there. Are there any other players that we should be looking out for at all?
Yeah, the front two, Josh Gordon and Keelan Lavery, have both. Gordon scored on Saturday, taking his tally for the season up to 10 in all competitions, which means both of the forwards have got 10 for the season now, which is pretty impressive in a side that doesn't create a huge amount of chances. So they're definitely ones to watch. Whether they play together is anyone's guess. We can often change formations sort of four or five times in a game, you know, never mind sort of over the course of four or five matches. So, you know, whether we start with two up front or not remains to be seen. But the front two are definitely worth watching. Liam Robertson goal is having another solid season, although, you know, you just want to throw in a clanger every now and again. But apart from that, there's not a huge amount of eye-catching talent in the squad, it has to be said.
Well, what about Danny Guthrie then? Because I think he signed just before we played each other on that first game of the season, and I think he came on as a sub. But has he managed to cement his place in the team?
Not really. I mean, he's been plagued by injury. He's not been fit all season, to be honest. He was playing in Indonesia, I think.
Right.
So he'd come from a slightly mysterious level of football, and I don't think he's been able to catch up in terms of fitness. And, you know, he's had some really good games where he looks like, you know, he's going to be that player who sits in front of the back four and dictates the play. Clearly, you know, he's got a great pedigree, but equally, he came on at Carlisle the other week for one of the worst sort of 20-minute cameos I've ever seen from a Walsall player. He just couldn't do anything right at all. You know, he looked hopeless. But yeah, you know, on paper, he was a good signing. In practice, he's not been hugely impressive, it has to be said.
Okay, well, one other player that I know that the Cobblers fans will not forgive me for not asking you about is Shea Facey. How's he been doing for you?
Yeah, again, he's been in and out of the side. He's struggled with injury. I know he's in the paper today saying that he's still not fully recovered from an injury. I think, unfortunately for Facey and one of our other right backs, Cameron Norman, who's, you know, a decent player as well. James Clark has been played at right back for quite a lot of the season, who's an old mate of Darryl Clark's and who he clearly trusts. But unfortunately, his performances haven't been quite up to scratch either. And, you know, a lot of fans were starting to say that, you know, the only reason James Clark gets in the starting lineup is because he's a mate of Darryl's, and, you know, Clark needs to stop picking his mates. It's hurting the team, which, you know, sometimes was fair, sometimes wasn't. But I think when that sort of sticks to a player, it you know, it can affect how fans see them. So, you know, Facey's been in and out. He's had some good games. He's had some poor games, you know, pretty much like every other one of our players, really.
Well, I always ask our opposition fans to give us a prediction for the upcoming game. Whether it's going to make any difference to your thoughts here, there is a campaign at our end to try and actually sell out the Bescot this weekend in terms of the away allocation. So it looks like there will be quite a decent away following at the game. But what are you thinking? Are you going for a home win?
I think you'd be a brave man to back Walsall at home, given how poor we've been at home over the last year, really. And, you know, the fact is we very rarely draw games as well. But I'm notoriously bad at predicting Walsall results. So I'm hopefully going to jinx it by predicting a 2-1 win for Northampton. But you never know. It may end up like the last time you turned up at our place with a decent following, and it could be a last minute winner, as when George Dobson banged that one into the bottom corner, which you know, I know didn't go down too well with you lot then.
Yeah, please don't remind us, Tom. Well, thank you very much for coming on. One last thing to ask you, if you can just plug your podcast.
Yeah, our podcast is One Pod Beyond. So if you fancy a bit of a insight into Walsall's view of the game on Saturday, I think we'll have a roundup of the action against Northampton. So maybe tune in if you won 7-0 to hear us you know, crying into our pints of Banksy beer.
Thanks very much to our Walsall fan there. So, Walsall on Saturday. Hopefully we'll be going into that game having won against Swindon, but you never know. This is the Cobblers that we're talking about. Walsall have had, well, a very indifferent season, haven't they, to date? They find themselves at the moment in 14th in League 2. They've won 11 and lost 15 games. Of course, one of those wins was the opening day victory at Sixfields over the Cobblers. But they just can't seem to make up their mind what they're going to do this season, by the looks of it. They were one of the pre-season favourites for promotion, and they've just not lived up to that expectation whatsoever, have they? What do you think, Danny? What are your thoughts on Walsall at the moment?
Firstly, I really enjoyed the Walsall fan there. I thought they were excellent, rounding it up in a difficult season for them. First thing to pick up is that they've lost 15 games, so they're not allowed to lose any more if they want to get promoted, are they? So they've got a big task on their hands. It seems to be one of those that did they come down last season? Yeah, so it's one of them that just adjusting back to League Two life, isn't it? But I did expect a lot more from them. Just really indifferent, aren't they? And yeah, it's not a lot.
Do you think, Jesse, that they're doing what we did last year?
Yeah, I think so. They were woeful at our place on the first day of the season, which says
still
more.
Won.
Yeah, exactly. It says more about us than it does them. I was chatting to a couple of Walsall fans recently, actually, and they said exactly what you're saying. It's they don't have a clue what's going on. They're up, they're down, they're left, they're right, they're forwards, they're backwards. They don't know what's going on. So for them, it's just a case of just running in as best they can at the end of the season. It's been one of those really indifferent seasons for them. They're not happy with the way they're playing. It's very stop start. And to be honest, they're one of those stupid teams where we could very easily trip up, but equally we could capitalise. So it was going to go either way.
Neil, your thoughts on Walsall this year?
Average.
Good word.
I was just looking through their squad, and I know Neil likes a good squad browse.
Ooh,
as well.
I do love a good squad browse.
A couple of things to pick up on their squad. Stuart Sinclair, I don't know if we mentioned this earlier in the season. What a beard that is. I don't know if you can see it.
That
but
is a beard, isn't it? It looks like a pirate.
second thing is, if you go all the way down to the bottom, there's a guy called Nathan Sharon, and that's the worst bit of photoshopping I've ever seen in my life.
No. Terrible bit of photoshopping, isn't it?
If you go to the go to the saga.co.uk and then go to the first team page, go all the way down to the bottom. Yeah, on the Walsall official website. Goes to their first team page.
Oh my word.
It's amazing.
I'm not laughing at the photo. I'm laughing at you lot laughing at the photo. He's like Spock off of Star Trek.
You look at number 18 as well, Jack Kearsey.
Oh, yeah. That's a proper parting, isn't it?
Isn't it a proper centre parting?
Look at that. I mean, you've got to go and look on sadlers.co.uk for this, haven't you?
It's curtains and the bowl cut in one glorious...
What's going on with Callum Cockerell-Mollett as well? He does not look happy to be there.
Callum Cockerell-Mollett, what a name.
He looks like he's smouldering. Oh, there's Shay Facey.
Just popping up.
There he is.
Oh, dear.
It's an eclectic bunch.
This is a lot more interesting than their season, so.
their squad is relatively ropey, isn't it?
On the face looks of it. Like Zach Jules looks like a bit of a beast, if you ask me. I wouldn't like to meet him in an alleyway. We're just doing their team talk for them now. Yeah. Tom Leake. Oh, he looks about 12. Anyway, right. Let's get some predictions for this match then. It's League Two on Saturday, away at the Bescot Stadium. Now, I believe actually that there's a campaign at the moment, which is hashtag sell out the Bescot. So we're trying to get as many fans down to Walsall as possible. On Saturday, the 15th of February, 2020. It looks like that might be going down a treat. They've got a fairly decent sized away end. Anyone got any memories of the Bescot Stadium?
Yes, I have got great memories of it. So I was proper young. I must have only been about 10.
So yesterday then?
And Sean said, come on, we'll go to Walsall. We were doing shocking in League One and they were doing really well at the time. And basically we went thinking we were going to get absolutely slaughtered and we won 2-0. And then Sean took me to get my first ever kebab.
This is more a story about your first ever kebab than the football, isn't it, Jesse? Let's be honest.
And it was sensational.
I can remember going to Walsall. I think we got hammered something like 3-0 and it was Darren Byfield playing for them. And he'd played for us, hadn't he? He played for us on loan. Danny, you'll probably know that.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
He came to us on loan and then he signed permanently for Walsall, didn't he? I'm presuming years later. And I'm pretty sure he scored against us. In fact, I remember him scoring against us and... right in front of the away fans, the Cobblers fans, and being quite inciting in terms of, you know, these days he'd have got a yellow card for inciting the crowd. But then I presume that we were, as a fan base, giving him quite a lot of stick throughout the match for probably with that good old-fashioned Cobblers reject chant.
I've been there a few times, never seen us win, never had a nice away game there. Won't go on Saturday on the basis that we're more likely to win if I don't go.
Fair enough then. In that case, let's get predictions.
Walsall away, sell out the Bescots. I think we should just send two fans there so they don't reach that target. I think we're going to win 1-0, Charles, and erase the memories of Dean Austin's gung-ho relegation match that we had there when we sent Ash up front.
Indeed.
Bye, Ash. 1-0, Charles, and the goal scorer will be Mark Marshall.
Oh, Eminem. Very good. Eminem indeed. I'm going to go for a 2-1 victory, I think. I'm being positive. I think we're going to come off the back of a draw against Swindon, as I predicted earlier, and we're going to go to the Bescot. We're going to sell it out, and we'll win 2-1, courtesy of goals from Scott Wharton and Ryan Watson, who will have a stormer to make up for Saturday's game against Port Vale. And he'll celebrate by lifting his cobbler's shirt up above his head, revealing another T-shirt underneath with a picture of Neil's face on it.
Ah, oh, well, that'll be nice.
Yeah.
Will it be Neil or will it be Michael Harriman?
Oh, well, now that is a question, isn't it?
I really hope we win because I am going up. I think we're going to win 2-1 and I think Charlie Goode's going to get both goals and he's also going to get sent off.
Oh, okay. Great.
It's going to be, we're going to win 2-1. Charlie Goode's going to get sent off, and we're going to hang on for dear life, and we're going to win.
Fair enough. Fantastic.
He's due a red card.
Well, you are right there. I think he is probably due a red card at one point. Neil, you're the last one of us to go. Prediction for Walsall away, please.
4-4.
Oh, you've set yourself up with some goal scorers here, haven't you?
4-4. Yeah, 4-4. It's that one game a season where it's a complete ding-dong.
Oh, I love a ding-dong.
Ding-dong.
Who doesn't love a ding-dong? And it's going to be crazy. 4-4, goal scorers, Sam Hoskins, 2. Oh, God. Well, I've stitched myself right up here, haven't I?
You have.
Lloyd Jones, 1. And Verdane Oliver, 1.
So that brings to an end another It's All Cobblers to Me. Thank you very much for listening. You might have noticed that I put out on Twitter a little link to how you can support the podcast. What we want to be bringing you over the next year or so, I want to get more interviews with past players. But we can only do that with a bit of financial support, because it is not free for us to make this podcast. But it is free for you to listen to it, and it always will be. Patreon.com/cobblers to me. Special thanks to Giles Lawrence, who is our latest member of the Patreon page. He's gone on and he's pledged to give $10 a month to us. Thank you very much, Giles. That is really, really appreciated. If you can do the same, then it would be absolutely brilliant. Don't worry if not, but it would be lovely if you can support us in any way, shape or form, whether that is joining the Patreon, whether it is leaving us a review and a 5-star rating on your podcast app of choice, or whether it is just simply listening to the podcast and telling your friends about us and where they can listen to it. It's absolutely brilliant that you all listen to us, and we really do think the world of every single one of you. So thank you very much for that. We'll be back next week as usual, looking back at all of these games that have happened this week and looking ahead. What is it? Exeter City, I think, will be the next match after Walsall. So we'll be looking forward to the Chessy Derby. We'll see you soon. Thanks very much for listening.
Oh, look, it's Shay Facey.
Bye, Ash.